are brought to you by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Good morning, everyone. I'm Steve Garner.
And I'm Emily Ash Lamb.
And we are the KSRO. Didn't that sound rehearsed?
We're going to get it. We're going to get it.
That did sound rehearsed. We are the KSRO Good Food Hour. This little show, Emily, your dad, Chef John Ash, and I started in October 1987.
Yeah.
My gosh, here we are 38 years later. And thank you for taking over John's seat. It's wonderful to have another Ash voice joining me on the show.
I couldn't be happier to carry it on.
It was a wonderful time, those late 80s. And this is leading into our guest, who we're going to have on in just a moment. Back in 1988, I read an interview in a review in the San Francisco Chronicle written by Patricia Unnerman, who we had on the show a lot in the late 80s, early 90s, about a place called House of Nanking. It had just opened. My wife and I read the review and said, well, we're going down there.
Yeah.
Drove down from Santa Rosa, and we couldn't believe the line on the sidewalk on Kearney Street. It was ridiculous for this tiny little hole-in-the-wall restaurant with a guy cooking in the window. Yeah. One guy. It was ridiculous.
One guy.
And
yeah.
Honestly, it might have been an hour and 20 minutes or so.
And you waited.
We waited. Yeah. And the food was so sensational. Mm. We've been going to the House of Nanking for, 37?
It's an institution. Yeah.
And so I couldn't have been happier when I got a blast from the publisher last year or saying, there's a new book. It's going to be on the radar, Steve. You should think about it. It's called House of Nanking. And I said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. And sure enough, here it is. The first time the recipes of House of Nanking have ever been published. Family recipes from San Francisco's favorite Chinese restaurant. And certainly one of America's favorite Chinese restaurants. Written by Kathy and Peter Fang. Daughter Kathy, father Peter Fang. And we're thrilled to have Kathy on the show this morning. Hi, Kathy. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Steve and Emily. This is a huge honor, and thank you for sharing that story. You're bringing back so many memories that I got to kind of relive with my father when we started writing this book together. And that story about Patricia Unnerman is in the book. So,
I think I caught that. And it's never, since the first wave, after that review, everything just broke loose. But before the review, your dad was kind of struggling, wasn't he, initially, before the review came out?
Yeah. I feel like in our culture, we believe in, fate, sort of. Like, things sort of kind of happen for a reason or timing. And so prior to that review, my father was actually doing very traditional Chinese, Shanghainese cuisine. And it wasn't doing that well because not a lot of people could appreciate Shanghainese food at the time, right? It was a little too adventurous. Of the amount of people that could appreciate Shanghainese food, there were probably about a handful of them, and my father and my mother knew all of them. So that's how that food space was at that time, even within the Chinese community. Because you think about San Francisco Chinatown at that time, most of the people there were all Cantonese speaking, so they were all from the southern part of China. And then you had a little bit of the Hunan cuisine that was more directed towards the Western palate, but truly everybody behind those businesses were all Cantonese, and they have their own particular palate and food that they appreciate. Shanghainese food is something that's different for them as well. And so, yeah, my dad struggled a lot because that was the food that he felt most comfortable cooking because that's where he's from. But once he started interacting with more of his customers, he started to realize that he had to make pivot. Like, he could not just do traditional Shanghainese food. And he just got very lucky in that what, you know, I don't know if you know the story of who actually brought Patricia Interman in. It was sort of this happenstance. Two people were walking just right outside of House of Nanking. One of them happened to be from Shanghai, and she smelled like incredible flavors coming from the restaurant. And she pulled her friend, who was Peter Kaufman, and said, "We have to come in here. It smells like home to me."
Mm.
And that's because my dad was eating, you know, like some Shanghainese food. And my dad spoke with her and was like so thrilled to just meet another person who was like from Shanghai that he just started making all sorts of dishes for her and for her friend Peter. And they were blown away by the food.
Wow.
Peter then told Phil, who is a really famous film producer and writer, and Phil then brought Patricia Interman, and they all came together to have a meal. And that's what led to the reveal. And that the lady from Shanghai happens to be the daughter of, at that time, one of the most famous female actresses of all time in China.
Mm. That's
and
amazing.
So it's just how things kind of fall into place. And that review kind of just changed everything for my dad. Like, people started to line up, and he realized, okay, this is one, my opportunity. So I'm not going to do all this traditional Shanghainese food. I'm going to start serving some things that are a little bit different, that incorporate more of the local ingredients and flavors into Chinese food. So.
Well, it was wonderful that your dad wrote an anecdote, and I love how the book is formatted. Your voice is there, then your dad's
yep.
voice is there. It feels like you're really over eavesdropping on a conversation mm-hmm. that you are having. And he wrote early on, he wrote that the only customers that were really coming in regularly were from the Mahjong Benevolent Association
yeah.
in Chinatown, which is hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, when we see these restaurant cookbooks, which we've received hundreds over the years, you really can't cook from them, to tell you the
right.
truth. They're more vanity projects. How did you make sure that this book could be replicated, the recipes could be replicated in a home kitchen?
Okay, so two things about it. We'll start with the why it's so accessible and why it's something that is for the home kitchen. So I actually had to create all these recipes myself. We never wrote down any recipes to begin with.
Mm.
For House of Nanking or any of the family recipes that are in the book. So the book is broken down into two. Half of it, maybe a little bit more than half, is House of Nanking recipes. And then the other side of it is all these family recipes that I grew up around, that my father grew up around, that my grandmother would make. And so I had to create these recipes out of my own kitchen. I did not recreate these out of the restaurant kitchen. And I actually have a pretty small kitchen. And I really liked kind of working within those confines and just kind of thinking about what I have, what I'm going to use. I didn't go buy any special equipment for any of this. I just used what I had, and I wanted to make it really approachable. I did not want this to be a book where someone just looks at it and says, "This looks all great, but, like, there's no way I can do this." And that was driven by my interaction with all the customers over the last, you know, 30 years. To 38 years, people always tell us, "We love your food so much. Like, can you please share a recipe?" And they say, "Oh, I love Chinese food, but, like, I feel like it's the one cuisine we just don't know how mm-hmm. to cook, and mm-hmm. it's so intimidating." Or people will say, "Yeah, but is this something I can actually do? Because I'm not really, like, a cook." And so that's why I really made it a point to create everything in my own home kitchen so that it's something that's approachable and not from the restaurant kitchen. Even the House of Nanking recipes were all done in my own home kitchen.
That's great. Emily, you had some thoughts about the cookbook.
Well, right? Hi, Kathy. Great to have you here today. And I absolutely loved the book, and it made me starving. But what I think I loved most was it almost reads like a play at the beginning, that of each recipe you have, it's either your dad or yourself that's giving these wonderful stories about how the dish came to be. And it just proved to me, you know, you eat, of course, with your taste buds and with your sense of smell, but it's like a full experience. You know, you really get to learn where it came from, which just makes the dishes sound even better.
Yeah, thank you for saying that and noticing. That was intentional. So because I knew I wanted to write this book with my father for many, many years, and just like our food, you know, we really wanted to approach it in a different way. Kind of, we always want to put a little twist on the mm-hmm. traditional. And we thought the restaurant and the business now is, it's so much of a family business between mm-hmm. the two of us and my mother that we had to make sure when people read it, they really got that sense from the book. And the best way to do it is to do it in both our voices because it kind of reflects two journeys, mm-hmm. Two perspectives. Everybody knows that, like, I grew up in that restaurant and people always ask, what was that like?
Right.
And then there's, you know, my dad's side, which even for me growing up, I did not know. I was there. I saw them working, but I didn't know everything that went behind, like the thought process behind the name of the restaurant. I discovered that by interviewing him for this book, right? I did not know how they actually ended up picking the location. These are all things that you think that mm-hmm. we would just sit down and have conversations over, but we don't because we're just so busy with our day-to-day. We're kind of focused on things of the moment, but not so much things of the past.
Absolutely.
And so it was a conversation. That's how we approached the book. I interviewed my father for it's like once a week over a span of almost a year of just hashing memories. And I would just ask him, like, hey, like, you know, how did you come up with this dish? Or how did you think of this? Why did you do this? It was kind of like an interview, and I wanted to capture my dad's response to everything and his memories, and then there were mine. So,
some recipes that caught your eye, Emily, in the book. Anything you want to share?
I mean, so truly, so many. I'm curious, Kathy. Are there ones that you're like, this is the one? This is my like favorite all time, or no? That's hard to pick one.
So you know, there's so many recipes in there that I love. There's two that I always talk about, even during like my book talks and interviews. The first one that I want to mention is scrappy noodles.
Yes.
The name of it in itself is already kind of like, okay, what does that mean? Well, I created this recipe as an ode to my father's capability of using resources mm-hmm. at a time where they didn't have very much. So in China, they were going through food shortages, and my grandmother struggled to feed five kids and her husband. Many times they had no protein. It was like one pot meal with like some measly vegetables if they could get it. And my father would go and watch these people make food outside, like the food stalls and whatnot, and he noticed this guy who was frying pork chops. He had like a pork chop stand, and he would fish out all these little fried bits, right?
Yep.
That we toss. And those are scraps. And he asked the guy, he's like, sir, you know, do you mind actually saving those for me? If you're going to toss it out, would you just give it to me instead? And the guy's like, no, you don't want that scraps. It's like bad for you. Like, he's like, don't worry what I'm going to use it for. Like, if you will save it for me, I'll come like every couple of days, or I'll come every day and grab it from you. And so he did end up getting it from him. And my dad immediately had thought when he saw those scraps that he could use that as a filling for wontons. He could use it as a topping for noodles because it had all that pork flavor in it. So when you bite into it, you're tasting pork, right? It's like pork fat, right? All that oil that's been frying the pork, it's flavor. And it's captured in these little, like, breadcrumbs batter. And so when he did that, sometimes they just have plain noodles, MSG, soy sauce, and sesame oil. That's it. They had nothing else in there. He said the second they put that in there, their family just felt so nourished and satisfied just from even that. I thought that was so, like, genius of my dad, right?
Absolutely.
And I just, if like, out of frugality, he came up with something that could, like, make his whole family happy, and it was tasty. So as sort of, like, a tribute to that, I decided to create that noodle dish. Of course, I'm going to not tell people to go fry a bunch of pork and then go, like, fish out the scraps. And I thought, okay, this, you know, essentially, let's take breadcrumbs.
Right.
And the flavors that he was telling me about, right? He was like describing that pork from what he was seeing, this is what it was like marinated in, soy sauce, dashing white, like all those flavors I incorporated into that seasoning for the breadcrumbs, toasted it so that it was crispy, and put it on top of the noodles. And that's how that dish came about.
Kathy, we're going to take a very quick break, about 2 minutes. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Kathy Fang is our special guest this morning on the KSRO Good Food Hour. New book written with her dad, Peter Fang, The House of Nanking, Family Recipes from San Francisco's Favorite Chinese Restaurant. And at 11:30, Sean Kwan will be joining us this morning. He and his wife, Jenny, own Bazaar Sonoma. Unfortunately, it suffered a tragic fire back in September, but they're doing some pop-ups. A great Chinese restaurant right here in Sonoma County. Back after this.
If you're crazy about your pets and love your livestock, then it's time to visit us at Larson's Feed and Pet Supply. Hi, I'm Ken Larson.
And I'm Amy Larson. We have everything you need to keep your animals happy.
Nutritious pet foods and top quality feed for your livestock. Horses, cows, goats, chickens, llamas, whatever you're raising.
At Larson's Feed and Pet Supply, we also have a wide selection of toys, treats, bedding, and accessories.
And when you need some expert advice, just ask. Our team can help you choose the right products.
Ranchers, hobby farmers, and devoted pet people make Larson's their only stop for supplying everything necessary for happy animals.
Stop by today and see why Larson's is a local favorite for everything feed and pet.
We're just west of Cotati on Gravenstein Highway and online at larsensfeedandpetsupply.com. Order online for in-store pickup or delivery.
L-A-R-S-E-N-S feedandpetsupply.com. We're open 7 days a week.
Larson's Feed and Pet Supply.
It's that time again, Sonoma County. The mornings are cooler, the warm blankets are coming out, and your furnace is waking up after a long summer nap. Make sure it's ready for the season with Henry Mechanical's $19.99 Furnace Tune-Up Special. Just $19.99. That's it. To have Henry's trusted HVAC pros check your system, clean it, and make sure it's running safely and efficiently so you stay warm all winter long. Yeah, you heard right. Just $19.99. And remember, Henry Mechanical is home of the free second opinion. A call to Henry Mechanical could save you a bunch on expensive repairs. So cuddle up with your favorite furry friend and tune up today for a toasty tomorrow. Call Henry Mechanical today or visit henrymechanical.com. Serving Sonoma County with your comfort in mind since 1992. Henry Mechanical. Tune up today for a toasty tomorrow. henrymechanical.com, home of the free second opinion.
SRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Steve Garner and Emily Ash Lamb in the KSRO kitchen. Our special guest this morning is Kathy Fang. Her and her dad, Peter, wrote House of Nanking, brand new family recipes from San Francisco's favorite Chinese restaurant. I have about 30 recipes that I want to talk about, but we only have a few minutes, Kathy. And based on 35 years of going to the restaurant, I have many of those favorites, and thank you for including so many of those, because one of them that actually Emily just opened to was the Tsingtao beer with chicken. And when I talked with you, Kathy, earlier, I said, hey, you took it off the menu. You said, well, yes, but we put it in the cookbook. And I realized you can't keep all these dishes on forever.
No, we would love to, but then our menu would be obscenely large.
Sure.
So
I love the story again with this one about that's the only, is that the only alcoholic beverage you offered, or the only beverage period, that it, all you could order there at one point was just beer, and you would get a Tsingtao beer, and that was the only choice. I find that like just fascinating with going to places
For years you'd see the boxes
and
the crates of Tsingtao beer.
And the amount, you even put the amount in the story of how many of those beers you would go through, and it's kind of a recipe for success with these places that have, you know, too much wine, too much beer, too many cocktails to make, that you're like, yeah, just pare it down to one and you'll go through them.
I know. I kind of wish we went back to that place where I'm just like, why don't we just offer one beer and leave it at that?
Exactly.
We ended up doing something with Tsingtao beer when the book came out, because there's, you know, at one point when we were only carrying their beer, their manager for all of West Coast came to visit us. And my dad said, the guy was just kind of like blown away when he walked into the restaurant, because he said, how is this the place that like basically sells the most Tsingtao beer out of any place out of the West Coast? He's like, this place is so small, right? And then he looks at all the cases like everywhere in the restaurant, and it was like, well, you know, we've got a lot of people coming in and out, and it's the only beer that they can drink. So
I
that's
love it.
Why. And there's a really, really touching story in the book. When you guys flip through it, try to find that one. It's about the title of that story is, you know, the car that Tsingtao Beer bought. Mm-hmm. And it's about one of our staff members.
I love
that. That story is very, very moving.
Well, and it also, it makes me think, so speaking of choice and your restaurant, you know, your dad was sort of choosing people's dining experience. Am I right? Is that still happening today?
Oh, yeah,
or
he still does it. He still does it. Yeah. Old habits never die. So, you know.
We're about out of time, but there's so many recipes we would love to talk about. But that's why we want to encourage our listeners to read the book. If you're not familiar with House of Nanking, you want to go after reading it. And you want to make some of these recipes, too. I love the story about your frugal aunt's spaghetti bolognese chow mein. What a juxtaposition of words that usually don't go together. The mapo tofu with a hot Italian sausage that you make in-house. I haven't had a chance to try that one yet, but if that's on the menu, we'll order it next time. It's 919 Kearney Street in San Francisco. And Kathy, we can't say goodbye before mentioning that you have your own restaurant now.
Yes, I opened Fang Restaurant down in Soma. It's been about 15 years, and I opened it with my father. So I work with my father there. I see him almost every day, and we're still going strong between the two restaurants and creating classic dishes for San Francisco, and people come see us from all over the world.
And your restaurant is called Fang.
Fang, our last name.
Yeah, their names can't mess with. So thank you so much for spending time with
Emily
and me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joy talking with you. And we'll be down to the House of Nanking and Fang soon.
Yes, please let me know.
Take care.
Before you do, we're going to take care of you guys.
Kathy Fang from House of Nanking. Mm. Coming up next, a local Chinese restaurant that deserves our support. And we want to make sure that you know how to support this wonderful restaurant right here in Sonoma County.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. In November, we're celebrating our 58th year serving the folks of Sonoma County and visitors with a raffle. Winners will be announced on December 8th. Are you already thinking about your holiday feasts? We have everything you'll need for a delicious meal. November brings us some wonderful winter veggies like cabbage, broccoli, various greens, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash. You'll probably find some late harvest summer veggies as well. For your main course, we'll have plenty of beef, pork, lamb, and seafood. You can even pre-order goose for Thanksgiving or Christmas. To round out your holiday table, a charcuterie platter would be a nice addition. We have three different cheese vendors and local artisan salamis to complete your feast. It's also time to start your holiday gift shopping, and we have great crafts vendors to help. Woodwork, candles, and jewelry all make wonderful gifts. It's all there at the market every Saturday, 8:30 to 1 at Luther Burbank Center. Hope to see you there.
Thanks to benefactors like Freeman Toyota, Read On Sonoma has grown from 7 participating schools last year to 12 schools this year. The number of students being served has more than doubled. 85% of Read On Sonoma students met their goal in the last school year, up from 43% just 2 years ago. Most importantly, average reading comprehension on quizzes is 91%. Freeman Toyota's commitment to these children's future is making all the difference. Designed as a fun and rewarding game, Read On Sonoma motivates students to improve their comprehension and reading habits. Reading is essential for success in school and life. Listen to this. The average fourth grader's reading level has increased by 3.5 grades since the 21-22 school year. These Read On Sonoma students reach the program's goal of reading at grade level by the time they finish fourth grade. Learn more about Freeman Toyota's dedication to educating all our children at readonsonoma.org.
It's turkey season, and if you're not eating them, well, you must be feeding them. The feed store in Sebastopol has everything you need to care for those gobblers, as well as any other type of animal feed you may need. Equine, hog, sheep, goat, poultry, and of course, we're your one-stop shop for any and all of your canine and feline needs. We are the feed store with more than 100 years of combined livestock and small animal feed knowledge and experience. Shop with confidence at the feed store in Sebastopol.
Sardo Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner and
Emily Ash Lamb.
We thought this up.
We may have to rethink this a little bit.
Yeah. Like I always used to introduce John Ash, and then that was introducing Emily. And she said, how about I introduce myself?
You can say my name. Oh, but
an innovation.
Maybe not.
On the show.
Maybe it sounds better coming from you.
So let's get the bad news over with first. Sean Kwan, thanks for coming in and sitting in with us today.
Thanks for having me today.
First of all, condolences about the restaurant that you and your wife own in Forestville, California, Bazaar Sonoma. It's not B-I-Z-A-R-R-E. It's B-A-Z-A-A-R. It got tremendous support, enthusiasm from the moment you opened your doors. The Press Democrat wrote great reviews about it. The Chronicle wrote a great review. Yeah. And then like within a day or a week of that Chronicle review where you were thinking, oh my gosh, it's to the stars,
it's going.
You had a fire.
Yeah. We're all still, I mean, granted at this point, I think reality has more or less set in for us. But maybe, you know, in retrospect, I think it's a little fitting because one of our, I believe it was a Press Democrat interview with Heather Irwin where, I think I said something to the effect of, you know, there's strength in being, there's certain advantages to being the underdog. and, you know, that was like sort of like at our immature stage in that restaurant, it was like, you know, that's something we should, you know, take advantage of and learn with and help us to grow organically. And it's just maybe it's a little fitting, but right as I feel like we're maybe growing out of that underdog stage, like, you know, a meteorite fell out of the sky and put us right back in there. So I, you know, partially sad, but partially kind of in comfort zone again.
Right.
In a weird way. So.
And where does that restaurant stand now? Is there repairs? Will there? I know we're going to talk about other things you're doing now.
Yeah.
But.
It's a pretty weird blessing in disguise, actually. We actually find ourselves in the scenario where we're rebuilding or it almost feels like building a restaurant from scratch. One of the biggest, I think, blessings of like the whole experience of opening Bazaar Sonoma, or Basso, as we affectionately call it, is actually the landlords. I personally have worked in restaurants like kind of all over the country for the better part of over a decade now. And I want to say this is the only time where I've worked in a restaurant where the relationship between the chef owners and the landlords are actually not just like cordial, but actually friendly. The landlords' names are Tiprin and Chris, and you know, they're like really great. Like they would come in and we would give them food and we would like hug each other, and then like some guests would be like, oh, like who the heck was that? And it's like, oh, you know, those are our landlords. And the general reaction is like, oh my God, those are your landlords?
It's not usually a collegial. It's usually an adversarial relationship.
Which is weird given that most restaurants talk about conviviality and community and happiness and things like that. But they have been incredibly, not just supportive, but nurturing throughout this entire fire and recovery situation. And we're actually working with them to rebuild the restaurant.
Amazing.
In a more, hopefully, ideal sort of arrangement. So,
got it.
Yeah, it's been
so
fun.
So what is the projection? And I know it's impossible to give us a firm date, but what are you looking at?
I'll give you the optimistic answer, which everyone on my team is going to roll their eyes at when they hear this. But optimistically, I want to say 6 to 8 months. Realistically, probably 12 to 16 months.
Yeah.
So another year,
yeah,
probably.
I'm hoping for the best and expecting the war of attrition, so to speak.
Okay.
But you're keeping things going.
You are
continuing with pop-ups, and you have an annex.
Yes.
Right?
So before I go into detail on that, let me just preface all of this by saying that a lot of these new, like a lot of this sort of activity in the interim was really is not something we like, you know, pulled ourselves by our bootstraps for and just kind of like found because we're so tough and badass. It's actually because of the community that we found ourselves in Forestville. Highly underrated. Not sure if I want more people to find out about it or fewer people to find out about it. But they were the ones who kind of opened all these doors for us in the wake of the fire. The space where we find ourselves at right now, which we kind of refer to as the annex, but it's actually a small 8-seater hole in the wall kitchen space that is occupied and operated by this gentleman named Gerard, who runs this business called Gerard's Paellas.
We've had Gerard on the show.
Probably one of the, for anyone listening, he's probably one of the coolest people you've never heard of. But like, he contacted us within 36 hours of the fire.
Wow.
And was like, hey, like, you know, do you guys need a kitchen space? And we're like, yeah, we kind of do. Do you want to use mine? I'm just like down the street. I'm like, are you sure? Like when? He's like, how about today? And we're just like kind of floored. Like, are you for real? Like right now? And then everyone came along and, you know, and the same goes to our neighbors across the street at Sonoma Pizza Company. They were the ones who kind of, you know, the owner, Chris Smith and his wife, Etta, super amazing power couple team. And they were the ones who were like, okay, Tuesday fried chicken, we're doing this. Let's get this show back on the road. And they kind of like dragged us kicking and screaming into like getting back on our feet. So it's been pretty incredible. Another, I would say, relatively unheard of experience in the restaurant industry, especially if you're used to the restaurant industries in big cities like I am. So we're very, very lucky. Incredibly, incredibly lucky to our community. I think out of all possible universes that something like this could have happened in, we're probably living in the best version. So,
incredible.
Still kind of wrapping my head around it. Every day I wake up, I'm like, dude, this is like not. This can't be for real.
And it really is. I've never heard of a community doing that. My head being in the restaurant business most of my life, too. I'm like, how does that even work? Who gets what? How do you pay for everything? Who's buying pizza? Who's buying dumplings? Like, but just they kind of threw that all to the wind and said it's more important. And it is more important to keep the community going. And that's amazing.
It's hospitality at its
best,
really is. I want to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Brilliant. And dinner at the annex, can we talk about that one?
I would love to.
Is a small menu, and you mentioned 8 seats, so someone
was actually emailed me when they heard you were going to be on, saying, are they doing pop-ups in other places around Sonoma County?
So the answer is sort of like kind of yes to both. So as far as the pop-ups go, so a few of our kind of long following folks will know that we started off as a pop-up called Second Staff. This was probably back in, I want to say like 22 or 23 that we started this, and we kind of like roamed around the county doing like everything ranging from fried chicken to sandwiches to kind of pseudo fine dining sort of things. And we've kind of revived that a little bit. So most likely you'll probably find us around the Santa Rosa and Healdsburg areas. Second Staff has historically been known to be sort of like this off the beaten track and intentionally difficult to find sort of thing. kind of intentionally, the operating phrase, owing to our maverick and sort of immature personalities back then, was we want to reward local involvement and punish tourists.
Nice.
Good business model.
Very great. So dumb. The easiest way to find out where Second Staff will be is to actually follow the Second Staff Instagram. All of those, we're pretty active on it, and all of the new locations will go up there.
Does that mean something in restaurant parlance, like Second Staff?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Great question. So Second Staff, so I'm originally from Chicago. I lived in Los Angeles for a bit, and one of the hallmarks of the restaurant industry is that you're usually working very late. So it was not uncommon for you to get off at between like midnight and 2 a.m. depending on how busy the day is.
Emily, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or in New York, like 4 a.m. I worked in New York City a long time. It was really late.
Four, that's so early.
No. Yeah, just starting.
So obviously, like we were just talking about, one common irony in the hospitality industry is the fact that you spend your whole career feeding people and scarcely have time to feed yourself. Right. So in restaurants, we have this thing called family meal or staff meal, which is usually served right before the dinner service for the whole staff to kind of sit together and get some food in their belly. In these late opening restaurants, it is not uncommon to have what is called a second staff meal or a second family meal, which would happen after services, after all, like the fancy guests have left, basically. And the, like, you know, as the kitchen's cleaning up, we'll kind of send one guy, like, okay, you know, Sean, you're on second family meal today. And so, okay, so make something like almost like stoner food, you know,
totally.
So, yeah. Something quick, tasty, hot, kind of dumb.
Pasta bake kind of giant.
Yeah.
Like,
cheese,
that'll...
smash burgers, yeah. Fried chicken, something like that. So we wanted to do a pop-up that would kind of tie into this sort of late-night chefs cooking for chefs sort of feel. And the best name we could think about, especially since a lot of us came from fine dining restaurants that were open that late, was to call it Second Staff as like an homage. Like, it's like, if you know, then you know sort of thing. And that basically
it's very
evolved.
Insider.
It is. And that was sort of the fun of it. It's like, yeah. We got to, like, the operating phrase became like, you know, it doesn't matter what industry you're from, doesn't matter what your background is. If you come to a Second Staff pop-up, we sort of treat you like you're part of our industry. That's how we talk to you.
That.
So can we blow your cover? Where are you next with Second Staff?
Oh, no, you're ratting me out.
Can we do exactly what you don't want us to do? Can we?
Oh, my God. My corporate overlord's going
to
kill me.
Oh, no. Okay. We don't have to.
No, I would love to. So our next pop-up is actually, so today is Saturday. It's going to be actually tomorrow at a wine bar in Healdsburg called Maison. Mm-hmm. We will be there this first round. We're doing a Hong Kong-style clay pot rice, kind of like if you have fried rice and paella had a baby.
Nice.
Sort of dish. And we'll be there from, I believe, 8 or 8:30 until 1 in the morning. So
let me just say that this is not truly insider information because you can print this out. So I went to the Basso website. It's bazaar-sonoma.com, correct? And you can get the dinner at the Annex, the 6536 Front Street in Forestville, all that info. But then you see the November calendar, which is great. And sorry to interrupt you, but continue on about your rice dish.
Oh, no. Clay pot rice, as far as the pop of this Sunday goes, clay pot rice is this extremely... it's one of those dishes I feel like where it's so common in its places of origin that people who grew up with it and are from there don't think it's all that special. So like my parents, for example, would be like, oh no, don't make that, like make French food. Like French food is, you know, French food is good. But the weird result of that is that when you come to a place like, let's say, Sonoma County, it's strangely rare, despite how, you know, well-loved and ubiquitous it is overseas. So like it's something that I always remember really fondly from my childhood. And it's kind of falls in the range of what I feel like a lot of chefs would call like a perfect dish. Mm-hmm. It's so simple. It's so delicious. It's got a little bit of everything. It is tender. It is crispy. It is savory. It's sweet. It's fresh. You know, it fills you up and it's simultaneously like rich, but not like heavy. So you feel like there's this term in Chinese called shufu, which means like healthy or like comfortable. Mm. Like you feel healthy after you eat it. I don't know. It's just so stupid simple. Every time I put one together, I'm like, this shouldn't work as well as it does. And it's one when I'm trying to explain it to somebody who doesn't know what it is, the best way I can convince or sell it to somebody is just to say something to the effect of like, if you enjoy food, I don't see how you cannot like this dish.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's like if you don't like this, something is wrong with you.
But I mean, here you're serving this clay pot down home thing you grew up as a child at Maison.
Right.
Maison.
It seems incongruous a little bit.
You know, okay, actually two parts to that. And the first part, I'll go back to community again. So the owners of Maison, a very, very lovely and power couple again, Evan and Jade Hufford. They were part of the front of house team and opening team and very, very centerpiece components of Single Threads wine program back in the day. I got to work alongside them very briefly. They're kind of in that realm of like, wow, you are like, I can't believe you are at the sort of caliber you are, and you're just like, if I just see you, you're just like a person, you know, like, right. You're so understated and so
the best kind.
Yeah, underrated, I would say. Very, very talented. And they were one of the first to reach out to us, both as a pop-up and now in the wake of Basso's fire, to be like, hey, come here, do pop-ups with us. And then the second part is just the fact that, you know, they're open until 1 a.m.
Right.
Of their own accord. Oh.
Do we need to make reservations for this?
No, please come as you are.
Okay.
Please bear with the chaos. These things are notoriously, they got like a chaotic, good kind of energy to it.
Nice.
if you come at the right time, you'll probably see me panicking behind the counter, you know, trying to make sure.
But you're in your element.
Yeah, thrive off of it.
So this is at 8:30 at Maison Yieldsburg on the 9th of, this is tomorrow.
This is tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the calendar, you're doing some collaborations with Judubu?
Yes. That is.
I like saying that. Let's wait on that because I'm going to practice saying that again. I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back. And Sean Kwan is with us. He and his wife, Jenny, own Basso, B-A-S-O. It means Bazaar Sonoma, and it's located in Forestville. And they're doing a pop-up. They had a big fire, but you'd never know it by this guy's approach
still
to life.
Still going.
My gosh, what an upbeat human being. Wonderful to meet you today. We'll be back after
Thank
this.
You.
Agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
Petaluma has two farmers markets, the East Side Market at Lucchese Park Tuesdays from 10 to 1:30, and Walnut Park Saturdays from 2 to 5 through November 22nd. Chicken, eggs, lamb, and beef are available from local farmers and ranchers, including Betha Springs Ranch in Petaluma. Get Petaluma cheeses from Acadena Cheese, baked goods from The Baker E, Redbird, Hillsburg Bagel, and Bedstone Bakery. Petaluma's own Strauss Family Creamery brings organic milk, yogurt, butter, and ice cream to the market most weeks. Grab veggies from Sonoma County's Ortiz Family Farm. Boost your health with fresh cold-pressed juices from Rooted Juice. Anna's Seafood sells fish straight from the docks. Grab restaurant-quality lunch or dinner from Tacos Don Pepe with vegan options, and Belfair featuring their award-winning chicken sandwich. You'll also find fresh honey, local artisans and crafters with candles, jewelry, and so much more.
More info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
Are you sitting on the fence thinking the real estate market may have passed you by? It's not too late. In fact, it might be the perfect time to make your move.
We're finally seeing more inventory and lower mortgage rates here in Sonoma County. That means more buying power, more choices, more opportunities, and less competition.
Still wondering if buying makes sense? Consider this.
Real estate builds wealth. As the value of your home goes up and your debt shrinks, your wealth grows.
Buying a home isn't just about where you live, it's where your future begins.
If you're feeling stuck and not sure where to start, let's take an honest look at your situation and help you come up with a plan.
Reach out to the Norman Home Team for a free, no-obligation conversation. Call or text 707-799-3617. Allison and Stephanie Norman are realtors at Keller Williams Realty Wine Country and hosts of the Real Estate Hour on KSRO, DRE license number 0172, 0334, and 0220-9237.
Dedicated to every heartbeat, we deliver the kind of cardiac care few others can. At Providence Santa Rosa Memorial Hospital, we're the North Bay's leading choice. Whether it's your heartbeat's rhythm or treating serious heart issues with less risk and faster recovery, know that we're here for you. Our cardiovascular specialists use the latest treatments with compassion and support at every step. Providence Santa Rosa Memorial Hospital. Heart care you can trust.
This week at buysonomadeals.com, get a $50 gift certificate for just $25 to Cezanne Peruvian Cuisine and Deli in Santa Rosa.
Chef owner Jose Navarro blends the bold flavors of Peru with global techniques for a one-of-a-kind experience.
From seven kinds of ceviche to steaks, chicken, and fresh seafood, locally sourced whenever possible.
Don't miss their chipino and seafood paella.
Grab your $50 gift certificate for $25 now at buysonomadeals.com.
KSRO. AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Thank you.
to have Sean Kwan in the KS Arto Kitchen with me, Steve Gardner, and
Emily Ashley. I'm sorry.
The restaurant is Basso, B-A-S-O, Bazaar Sonoma in Forestville. They suffered a tragic fire in September, but they're doing a dinner at the Annex, which is just almost next door on Front Street, right? 6536 Front Street, Thursday through Sundays, 5 to 9:30. Just show up. No reservations, right?
Nope. Come as you are.
And you can go online to bazaar/sonoma.com. And the menu's right there.
The menu's right there.
That sounds so good.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. So you're from Beijing.
Yeah. I was born in Beijing initially and moved to the States with my parents when I was around 7 years old, maybe just shy of seven. And was, I guess, formerly raised. All my core memories is in Chicagoland area. So my parents moved to this little northern suburb that's, I believe, the plot of Mean Girls was actually based off of that suburb.
And what is that suburb?
It's called Wilmette.
We know it well.
Yeah.
Our children live in Deerfield.
Oh, my God. We probably can't be friends. Everybody hates. I went to a high school called New Trier.
Yeah, we know it.
Oh, yeah. I can't be friends with basically anybody who went to any other school district there. yeah, no one liked us. But,
that's so funny.
Okay, so good. Beijing, Chicago, out here to Sonoma County.
And Forestville.
And Forestville.
It's a long story best told over whiskey.
Got it.
So would you briefly tell us about how we can contribute to your rebuilding efforts?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, this is so foreign for someone in my position, like the pride of being a chef and an industry person to say, but we have a group of very close and somewhat intimidating friends in Sonoma County. They're called the Joe Luck Club. It consists of a few, what I can only refer to as very feisty Chinese aunties. If you are from this sort of background, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And they started a GoFundMe actually a few weeks ago to help us kind of deal with the recovery, pay for our staff. It turns out our insurance for the restaurant was comically awful. This was all sort of like their gesture of love, because Chinese aunties can't be forced to say I love you, so they do, you know, gestures like this. But if you do, if you or anyone you know is interested in this sort of thing, please check out their GoFundMe that they made for us. I will be honored and eternally grateful.
And where do we find that info?
I think if you search GoFundMe Basso Fire Recovery on Google, it will be probably the first thing that comes up.
GoFundMe
Basso Fire Recovery.
Fire Recovery.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll go from there.
And then, of course, we can support you by going to the Annex. Well, yeah, and also, you're selling frozen dumplings and things that you can prepare at home, am I right?
Yeah, so that was something we actually just dialed in at the original restaurant Basso before it went up. So we're restarting this kind of frozen dumpling program. It's got a few glitches in the system that we're working out, but if you reach out to us via either our Instagram at Basso or even emailing us directly, we'll always have a selection of what frozen dumplings are available, and you can just tell us what you want, and we'll get those packaged up for you, and just swing by the restaurant, and we'll have them packed, you know, ready for you to go.
It looked really easy to do. I went on your site. You get to pick pork scallion, I think, or a couple, you know, other, and it was like, great, sounds good to me.
So are they real spicy, those dumplings, or not?
The dumplings themselves are not. They're all pretty mild, and they're all pretty, I guess, like homey, like more home-style dumplings that we make ourselves. If you want to make it spicy, if that's your thing, we actually do have a separate, like a house-made chili crunch that we make. It's kind of a mix between mom's recipe and chefs being dumb. it's kind of like got the spicy, fruity, savory, kind of very like mouth-watering quality to it, and it's actually a chief component of one of our signature dishes at the Annex right now called Zhong dumplings, and it's I don't know, I'm pretty proud of it. So if you want to give your food a little extra kick, it's kind of like the silver bullet to making anything taste good, in my opinion.
Nice.
This is beautiful. And I notice you do have the Mapo tofu, which is actually in the House of Nanking cookbook also. That's a really popular dish, isn't
it? It's one of those dishes where, kind of like the way we were describing clay pot earlier, it's just got this universal appeal for both people from that part of the world where the dish originates, as well as like people here. Like it covers pretty much everything you could love in a plate of food. And actually one of our approaches to the dish, to Mapo tofu at Annex, is it's traditionally flavored with pork, you know, so it's got this kind of savory umami quality to it. Because this dish is so prevalent, we felt it was okay to kind of modify it a little bit. So we actually do a vegan version of it, where we use shiitake broth, fried eggplant, and tofu that we make. And we kind of turned it into this kind of hybrid dish between Mapo tofu and the separate Sichuanese dish called somewhat unfortunately translated into fish fragrant eggplant in English. It sounds so much better in Chinese.
But say it in Chinese.
Yu xiang tie zi.
Oh, it does.
It's almost
lovely.
Like poetical and musical. In English, fish fragrant. Everyone's like, ew. we serve it like Mapo tofu. So if you are, you know, if you are vegan, and you can
Emily,
try it.
I don't know about you, but I can't wait to go.
And I want to bring dumplings home to have around.
So there it is. Join Basso for dinner at the Annex, 6536 Front Street, Forestville. All the info is at Bazaar, Bazaar-Sonoma.com. Sean, thank you. It was a joy meeting you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much
for
having me.
And you'll keep us in the loop about the rebuilding process and other things that are going on.
You got it. Yes, chef. Okay.
Yeah. Emily, next week?
Next week.
Okay, talk to you then. Thanks,
see you
listeners.
Then.
I'm Steve Garner.
Hola, chicas. ¿Estás lista para sentirte fabulosa? This is Karina Lozano, your surgical coordinator, here to take care of you at Dr. Tom Cosmetic Surgery. Our goal is to help you achieve the confidence you deserve. If you're thinking about a breast augmentation to enhance your curves or a cosmetic breast surgery to feel more comfortable in your skin, Dr. Tom es tu opción. Looking for something extra? Try Smart Lipo. Say goodbye to that stubborn fat and hola.